Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into something pretty intense. Fred Cohen's 2025 work on, well, surviving the cyber age. It's definitely defined by its urgency. And some pretty volatile claims. You know, you can tell the source material means business when the author kicks things off with these, honestly, kind of absurd legal disclaimers. He's not just worried about liability like normal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he preemptively disclaims responsibility for, and I'm quoting bits here, choking people with the pages.
Seriously.
Seriously. And even side effects you may have in the afterlife from having sworn about certain things I may have said. I mean, it just sets this incredibly dramatic, almost fatalistic tone right from the start.
Yeah, that absolutely screams high stakes, doesn't it? That whole legal section is basically a signal, I think.
Yeah.
It's saying we're dealing with systems that are maybe beyond our current control.
Yeah.
Responsibility is diffuse and the consequences,
yeah,
existential.
Yeah.
So our mission today for you listening is really to cut through some of that dramatic noise. We need to figure out exactly how the power of these modern cybernetic systems is concentrating influence.
Okay.
And why that concentration might be, well, destroying human knowledge. And then what actual concrete steps are proposed, you know, distributed steps to try and ensure survival and rebuild some integrity in this digital world.
Okay, let's unpack that. First things first. Cybernetic systems. For those of us who aren't engineers, what does that actually mean according to these sources?
Right. So fundamentally, it's a composite system. Think sensors, actuators, communications, and controls.
Okay.
But what's really fascinating, I think, is how recursive the definition is. Composites of cybernetic systems. They're also cybernetic systems.
Oh, okay.
And the sources are really clear. This isn't just about machines. It applies to human groups, too. As societies formed, they became these composites of people and things. So societies themselves are basically complex, self-governing cybernetic systems.
Which leads us, I guess, straight to the core threat of this era. The author claims this age is uniquely dangerous. Why is automation in the cyber world a bigger threat than, say, the dangers of the Industrial Revolution?
Well, because automation fundamentally equals amplification. That's the core idea. It gives an unprecedented power to a small number of people.
A small number.
Yeah, a small number. To do potentially catastrophic harm to vastly more people than ever before. If you look back, historically, control always needed mass support, right? Mm. Or physical force, or at least visible compliance.
Oh, sure. Armies, police.
Exactly. Huh. The cyber age sort of removes that barrier. Targeted influence, targeted control. It can all be done remotely, highly automated, and without needing a physical army or, you know, the known backing of the masses.
So if we trace that history, the scale is just mind-boggling. We went from, what, small-scale physical combat, fiefdoms?
Right. Then the Industrial Age, with its ability to cause massive casualties, think world wars.
Into the age of WMDs.
And now we're here. The cybernetic age, the sources describe systems capable of executing targeted actions at the granularity of individual people.
Individual people. Wow.
Yeah. Individuals identified by intelligence processes and then potentially manipulated or even destroyed by these complex global cybernetic systems operating from, you know, afar.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredibly fine-grained capacity for control and destruction.
That historical perspective really puts the scale into focus. But what makes this feel so urgent, I think, is the paradox the author points out. Despite this terrifying new potential threat.
We never had it so good, right?
Exactly. We live longer, healthier lives. We have more convenience, better communications than, I don't know, any king or queen probably had 100 years ago.
That's the tragedy of it. We've hit this incredible peak, maybe peak enlightenment, peak ease, peak freedom to choose how we live. And yet.
Yeah.
The argument is we're already past that peak.
We're losing it.
We're losing our reasoning capacity. The claim in the source is that the wealthy and powerful are systematically, purposefully using these very systems to sow ignorance, discontent, hatred. Basically, through deception, they're managing human beliefs at scale.
Wait, hang on. So this isn't just like an accidental side effect of technology. The source is alleging a systematic destruction of society's capacity.
Yes.
Leveraging these systems to rewrite history, destroy facts, flood everything with mass fabrications.
And this erosion, it's hitting expertise particularly hard. The author actually makes a direct comparison to the movie Idiotocracy.
Oh, wow.
Where, you know, commercialism and just sheer intellectual decay take over. Yeah. We're apparently seeing huge layoffs of scientists, engineers,
yeah,
in really critical fields, disease control, severe weather warning, epidemiology.
So if the experts are being pushed out, then the data they collected, the knowledge they curated, that must be at risk too.
It is. The sources talk about the destruction, or maybe just concealment, of vital databases, stopping ongoing data collection. And critically, replacing those human expert analysts with generative AI.
Okay, AI.
Yeah, AI that can churn out scientific-looking reports really quickly and cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
But often, the claim is they're just made-up word sequences that happen to align with what those in power want to hear.
But couldn't AI also be used for good here, like automating fact-checking or speeding up real science? Why does the source seem so sure that centralizing wealth guarantees the AI will just serve deception?
Well, the argument is that when the primary goal is control, not discovery, then speed and obedience become more valuable than accuracy. Centralized power needs narratives that are predictable, compliant. AI delivers reports faster and cheaper than, say, an independent scientist might. And it does exactly what it's told, right? Without messy ethical concerns or critical questions, it becomes a tool for pushing the desired reality, not necessarily the actual reality.
That's genuinely terrifying. It's like that old saying, eating the seed corn, but applied to knowledge itself.
Precisely. That's the metaphor used.
Yeah.
If we lose the knowledge, the data, the trained people, the institutions, we lose the capacity to advance knowledge in these key areas. Progress grinds to a halt.
Yeah.
Maintenance fails. We risk essentially running out of corn, which implies not being able to support our current population size, leading to societal thinning, die-offs, more pestilence, affecting everything from infrastructure to food.
And the sources also highlight that this decline isn't, like, happening everywhere equally. While the U.S. might be seeing this drop-off in science and engineering, China, for instance, is mentioned as continuing to advance.
Right. That historical brain drain that benefited the West for so long, it might be starting to reverse. Survival, according to this perspective, hinges entirely on preserving and advancing know-how.
Okay. So this really brings us to the nature of control itself in this age. If we connect the dots, the big battle seems to be between centralization and distribution, right?
Exactly. The internet was successful initially because it was decentralized. But now the immense wealth generated by tech is pushing control back towards consolidation. A few powerful corporations, a few governments.
And often, the sources say they're using the idea of cybersecurity as the lever to enforce acceptable narratives. Can you drill down on that a bit? How does security become censorship?
It becomes the mandatory gatekeeper. Think about it. Systems requiring government-approved certificates for hardware, or mandatory centralized digital IDs for any online communication, or even technical systems that enforce acceptable content, filtering through automatic security updates.
Okay, I see.
These things are sold to us, to the public, as protection, right, for our safety. But they can be easily repurposed to control content. They can make it technically impossible, or at least very difficult, to share information that challenges the centralized narrative.
And this centralization is supercharged because of the speed of data, right? Let's bring in that concept, the OODA loop. Observe, orient, decide, act. Modern tech, sensors, automated controls. They're creating an ever-tightening OODA loop.
The tightening loop is key. It means the time between sensing your behavior, observe, and executing some kind of influence action act becomes almost instantaneous and highly individualized.
So it's not like a mass broadcast anymore.
No. The system knows exactly what to show you, which news item, which ad, which fact. It injects it right into your personal stream right now to get the desired effect. And this is exactly where generative AI becomes, well, weaponized by the centralizers, according to the source. Analytical AI figures out precisely when and where influence is needed based on your real-time behavior, your observables.
Okay.
Then Gen AI quickly cooks up a compelling story to fill that gap. Often, these stories might lack factual grounding, but they're designed for maximum emotional impact.
And the really chilling insight here is that rational fact-checking often doesn't stand a chance against a powerful, engaging story told by someone compelling. People are swayed by narrative, not dry data dumps.
Exactly right. Automation right now is described as a multiple-edged sword. These centralized powers are apparently using it to push people towards division, distrust, conflict, even self-indulgence.
Right.
Because those emotional states are actually easier to manage than, say, rational, organized opposition.
Mm.
The management of human beliefs itself has been automated.
Okay, that's a pretty bleak picture. So how do we fight back? Where's the path forward? The author talks about establishing narrative integrity. What does that actually look like in practice when centralization seems so dominant?
Narrative integrity is presented as the systemic antidote. It basically means content has to meet three core criteria.
Right.
One, it must reflect reality. Two, it needs proper attribution back to its source.
Right.
And three, It must be demonstrably unaltered. You need systems where you can trust that the content is suitable for its purpose, even if, frankly, you can't trust the person or entity that created it.
And given that we probably can't trust a single central authority to maintain that integrity, I mean, history suggests they'll eventually tweak the narrative for self-interest.
Inevitably.
Then the integrity itself has to be distributed, right? Built into the system.
It has to be. And it needs to be built on something like the scientific method. Reliability, in this context, comes from redundancy, from reasoning, and from repeatable experimentation. The key difference is how failures are handled. You don't ignore results that contradict your theory of the falsifications. You embrace reconciling them to get a better grasp on reality.
Okay, let's break down the specific attributes needed for this distributed narrative control loop. The source lists four. First up, transparency.
Transparency is about speed and clarity. It means having a very low time delay to transparency. If a piece of content is found to be deceptive or its source is compromised, that information, that label, needs to be attached almost immediately upon the first revelation by any observer in the system. It's about making the whole process visible.
Got it. Okay, next is resiliency.
Resiliency just means the system has to be able to fix itself, or at least fail gracefully. So if one part gets compromised, maybe a server goes down or one data source fails, the really important functions of the whole system keep running. Survival depends on those critical functions persisting.
Yeah, makes sense.
Then we have diversity. This feels absolutely crucial against centralization.
It really is. It's maybe the ultimate defense against those single points of failure we talked about. Diversity means the system must be made up of separate and different components.
Like
different software, different hardware makers, different operating systems, even different organizational structures running parts of it. The goal is making sure that no single attack, no single compromised component, or even a small set of them can bring down the entire system.
Nope.
Everyone runs, say, Windows, and Windows gets subverted.
And goes down.
Right. But if you have genuine diversity, subverting one piece only affects a small part of the whole.
Okay. And the final piece, which feels essential for trust online, attribution.
Attribution tracks the whole life cycle, the chain of custody for information.
Mm-hmm.
It's the mechanism that logs how content was created, how it got to the user, and this is important what the user then does with it. This gives you full transparency into the process itself. It lets you trace a narrative back to its origin and see how it might have been manipulated along the way.
So putting these four together, transparency, resiliency, diversity, attribution, it completely shifts the power dynamic, doesn't it? Instead of having perception dictated by central controllers.
Exactly.
This kind of distributed integrity lets the marketplace of ideas flourish, as the author puts it. It automates linking integrity markers to narratives, giving individuals back the ability to make genuine, independent choices. So the core takeaway we got from digging into these sources seems pretty clear. Survival in this cyber age really depends on actively fighting that centralization of influence and wealth. And the strategy is distributed integrity, built on transparency, diversity, resiliency, and attribution.
And you know what's fascinating is the author's final moment of reflection. He reminds you, that information only ever has meaning in context. He even admits the sort of black and white urgency in his own writing.
Yeah.
He says, "You are assumed to be the good one and they are the bad one." But then immediately follows with, "It is really just a matter of perspective."
Yeah.
Even the book itself, he says, is only black markings on a white background. Which raises, I think, a really important question for you, the listener. The author talks about needing to grok what you want to grok. Now, to grok means to really internalize something, understand it deeply, empathize with it, truly make the truth your own.
Right.
So what does it mean for you to grok what you want to crock in an age where narrative control is becoming so hyper-personalized, delivered in real time, tailored just for you?
That's definitely something to think about. Stay safe out there and try not to fear too much, but maybe remember that classic sign-off from the source material itself. It's not paranoia if they really are out to get you. Always take that extra moment to explore the context, the attribution, the diversity behind the information you consume.
Until the next deep dive.